Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will continue diplomacy as part of efforts to safeguard national interests and to remove sanctions against the country. Pakistan Senator Anwar ul-Haq Kakar has been named as caretaker prime minister to oversee the upcoming national elections. And the death toll from the massive wildfires in the U.S. island state of Hawaii rises to 80. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic has never left the negotiating table and that Tehran will continue its efforts for the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. Hossein Amir Abdollahian said the administration of President Ebrahim Raisi has focused on dynamic diplomacy to fulfill national interests since it took office in August 2021. The remarks came after Iran's foreign ministry confirmed the ongoing process of releasing $6 billion worth of Iranian funds, which have been unlawfully held in South Korea due to U.S. sanctions. It added that a number of Iranians who have been detained in the U.S. on baseless accusations will be also released soon. Later, Iran's mission at the U.N. announced that several American inmates in Tehran's Evin prison have been released to house arrest, preparation for a prisoner swap between the two countries. Iran has strongly condemned a terrorist attack in Syria which targeted a bus carrying government forces in the eastern province of Deir al-Zor. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani expressed sympathy with the Syrian army and government. Kanani blamed the soaring terrorist attacks in Syria on the continuation of intelligence, security, and logistical support of the terrorists that are provided with the aim of causing instability. He said the attempts to resuscitate terrorists and help the survival of terrorist attacks by Daesh and other Takfiri groups in Syria complement and are in line with the Zionist regime's aggression against Syria's sovereignty. A war monitoring group said at least 33 people were killed in the attack that took place on Friday. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility for the assault. Iran's human rights chief says Tehran has set up a special court against over 100 members of the MEK terrorist group to bring them to justice for the crimes against the Iranian people.
A massive case has been brought against the terrorist MEK organization and 107 of its senior members. The relevant indictment has been sent to the court. A special court has been set up to look into the case. The court will soon start its work in accordance with the Code of Criminal Procedure. The indictment has been published and announced in media, and the defendants have received emails of that as well.
Ghadi Babadi said MEK terrorists have the blood of thousands of Iranians on their hands. He said the terrorists are walking free with impunity in certain countries. Of course, Ghadi Babadi explained some of the countries which are hosting these terrorists have imposed restrictions on them. He said that Iran welcomes such restrictive measures, but they are not enough, and host countries should either expel the MEK terrorists or put them on trial. He said that Iran will tap into all judicial, legal, and political potential, both at home and abroad, to bring MEK terrorists to justice. The MEK has killed over 12,000 Iranians in the past four decades in its terrorist attacks against Iranian officials and ordinary people. An Iranian parliamentary delegation to Lebanon has met with the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement. The Iranian delegation and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah discussed the latest developments in Lebanon, occupied Palestine, and the region. The delegation is led by the head of the National Security and Foreign Policy Commission of Iran's parliament. The visiting Iranian parliamentarians have also held talks with Lebanese officials in the capital, Beirut.
Head of the Iranian Parliament's National Security and Foreign Policy Commission, Vahid Jalalzadeh, is leading a parliamentary delegation to Beirut for talks with top officials. The first significant meeting was with Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri. During their talks, Jalalzadeh stressed that the meeting was a chance to discuss the latest developments and express Iran's support for Lebanon.
It was an opportunity for us to reiterate the official stance of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We stand by Lebanon, both in its resistance against the Israeli regime and its struggle to overcome the country's economic hardships.
The delegation also met with representatives of the Palestinian factions in Lebanon and discussed the latest developments in Palestine, especially the occupied West Bank.
In this meeting, we discussed the Palestinian resistance and the deterrence power in the face of the Zionist entity, as well as the resistance operations which are increasing in the West Bank. Both the Palestinian and Lebanese factions underlined the significant role of the Islamic Republic of Iran in their resistance against the Israeli regime. We received guarantees that Iran's support for the Palestinian people will continue until the full liberation of the occupied territories.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been steadfast in its support of the Palestinian cause since it was founded. This is a strategic stance adapted by the Islamic Republic, and the Palestinian people and resistance movements understand this. Iran's support has been fruitful in the West Bank, and it will eventually lead to the liberation of Palestine and other occupied Arab territories.
The Lebanese Foreign Affairs Parliamentary Committee met with the Iranian delegation and welcomed the visit as part of efforts to boost Tehran-Beirut ties.
And it was a good opportunity also to share what we do as a Foreign Affairs Committee in the Parliament and what kind of issues we deal with. So again, it's a very mutual and important visit that we'd like to build upon with all our friends, given our need for this support from all over.
The Iranian parliamentary delegation arrived to Beirut from Damascus and met with all Palestinian factions here in Lebanon. They have reiterated to the Lebanese and the Palestinians that their support is unwavering in assisting the people of the region to confront the U.S. Zionist prevalent threats. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and the opposition leader Rajat Riaz have agreed to name Senator Anwar Ul-Haq Kakar as caretaker premier to oversee elections. Kakar, who is said to be close to the Pakistani military, has been serving a six-year term in the country's Senate since 2018. Now he should name a cabinet and head an interim government. Pakistan's parliament was dissolved on Wednesday, and by law, an election should be held within 90 days, meaning early November. But there are fears that the elections may be delayed by as much as 6 months. A leaked classified document shows that the U.S. pushed for the removal of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan last year. U.S.-based news outlet The Intercept says it has obtained the document from an anonymous source in the Pakistani military. It says the State Department officials used threats and promises to push for Imran Khan's removal over his stance on the Ukraine war.
The U.S. publication has obtained a classified document suggesting Washington pushed for the removal of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan from office. The document has been published by The Intercept. According to the secret cable, known internally as a cipher, a meeting took place on March 7, 2022, between the Pakistani ambassador to the U.S., Asad Majid Khan, and two State Department officials. During the meeting, U.S. officials, including the Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of South and Central Asian Affairs, Donald Liu, encouraged the Pakistani government to remove Imran Khan over his neutrality over the war in Ukraine. The day before the meeting, Khan addressed a rally and responded directly to European calls that Pakistan rally behind Ukraine. During that rally, Khan said Pakistanis were not slaves to the Europeans and Americans. He said, "We are friends of Russia, and we are also friends of the U.S. We are friends of China and Europe. We are not part of any alliance." 1 month after the meeting with U.S. officials, a no-confidence vote was held in Parliament, leading to Khan's removal from power. The vote is believed to have been organized with the backing of Pakistan's powerful military. The cable reveals both the carrots and the sticks that the State Department deployed in its push against Khan, U.S. officials promising warmer relations if Khan was removed. They also threatened Pakistan with isolation if Khan was not removed from power. The diplomatic meeting came 2 weeks after the war began between Russia and Ukraine. Before his ouster, Khan had already accused a quote foreign power of funding a conspiracy to topple his democratically elected government.
So I get this message. Donald Liu is telling the ambassador that unless I, Imran Khan, is removed as the prime minister in the no confidence motion, there'll be consequences for Pakistan. It was a conspiracy. It was the army chief. It was the guy who's the prime minister right now. And the U.S. came into it as thinking as I'm someone anti-American. Some reason, if you don't agree with the U.S. foreign policy, you're turned anti-American. First, worry about your own people rather than getting involved in conflicts.
Former Prime Minister Imran Khan has been suspended from politics for 5 years. He's also been sentenced to 3 years in prison on graft charges, which he is dismissed. Han now has launched legal challenges against his conviction. He was arrested in Lahore at the weekend.
The unnamed foreign power was interpreted as a clear reference to the U.S. Following Han's ouster from power, Pakistan plunged into a crisis. He was elected in July 2018, promising to fight corruption and to fix the economy. But those pledges went unmet, and the world's second-largest Muslim country was gripped by a financial crisis. After Han's removal, his supporters took to the streets across Pakistan to show their support for the removed prime minister. Since his removal from power, about 200 court cases have been lodged against Han by the military-backed government.
All my time is spent from going from one court to another courtroom. I have made, in 2 months, over 350 court appearances. And my legal team is busy fending off one case after the other. But the thing is, nothing sticks, because these are frivolous, bogus cases. And what now they are planning to do is to have military courts. And this is right now in the Supreme Court, whether the courts will allow military courts or not. And the objective of the military court is that there I certainly will be sentenced.
The former prime minister has maintained that the cases against him are politically motivated to keep him out of power. He says the country's powerful military is behind these cases. Han has been barred from holding public office for 5 years by the country's electoral authorities. The decision was announced by the Election Commission of Pakistan days after Han was sentenced to 3 years in prison for corruption. Under Pakistani laws, a convicted person cannot run for public office for a period set out by the Election Commission of Pakistan.
The recent premature decision by the Election Commission of Pakistan is just another method for this unmandated government to try to eliminate Imran Khan from the political landscape of Pakistan. We must remember that Imran Khan was, is, and always will remain the chairman of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, the largest national-level party in the country. Imran Khan's case against him from a session court will be, we're very confident, will be reversed.
Khan is not the first Pakistani prime minister to be convicted of alleged corruption. It is believed the political system in Pakistan is widely mired in corruption, and none of the politicians and political parties have shown any desire to fix the system. On Thursday, Pakistan's parliament was dissolved on the recommendation of Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, making way for a general election amid political and economic crises. But the vote could be delayed several months, with the Election Commission set to start redrawing hundreds of constituencies based on a fresh consensus. Analysts have said any delay in the election could fuel public anger and add to uncertainty in the cash-strapped country.
Hawaii's Attorney General says she has opened an investigation into how authorities responded to devastating wildfires that have left at least 80 people dead. The top official on the U.S. island in the Pacific says the probe includes a comprehensive review of the handling of the crisis before, during, and after the wildfires. The announcement comes as criticism swells over the official response to the blazes, the most serious of which tore through the historic town of Lahaina, reducing it to ashes. Residents complained that there were no warnings about the fire, which trapped many people. Meanwhile, search teams have been combing through the charred ruins of the town, looking for more victims. Thousands have also been left homeless in what has been described as the worst natural disaster in Hawaii's history. Junior doctors in England are on a strike again as their dispute with the government over pay drags on. The industrial action began on Friday, running for 4 days. We talked to our correspondent in London, Syed Puriza, about the strike, why the doctors are walking out, and how the action is impacting health services.
As far as the doctors, junior doctors are concerned, this is the fifth time since they first walked off the job in December last year. It is a deadlock dispute, no doubt, with both sides, junior doctors, BMA, and the government, saying that the channels of negotiations are open. We also understand that informal talks are underway with a third-party adjudicators to try and resolve the issue, but neither of the two parties has agreed to go to the negotiating table formally. On the one hand, you have the government, as you said earlier, saying that there is no money. The final offer was that 6% with that more than £1,000 lump sum that would amount to 8.8%. inquiries, whereas the junior doctors are saying as long as there's no parity or what they call pay restoration, they're not going to talk. They're not going to the negotiating table. As we all know, they are asking for 35%, 36% of account percent increase to their pay, which the government has ruled out as unaffordable simply because they say that it sends all the wrong messages to the public sector at a time when inflationary pressures are still high. But what is happening beyond all of this is it's the patients who are bearing the brunt of it. As a result of these strikes, we have seen more than 800,000 appointments being canceled or postponed, with some saying that the strikes in the next few days, if they continue, those numbers will be pushed beyond 1 million.
Meanwhile, researcher and commentator Clive Menzies also gives his views on the ongoing industrial action in the UK.
There is a default assumption that the NHS was at one point actually doing what it was supposed to do. But actually, this is part of a much bigger debate that's gone on for over 2,000 years. And that is basically the war model of medicine. In other words, that we're vulnerable beings that are under attack from viruses and germs, both of which have been discredited, versus the idea that we are naturally healthy. And what happened in the 19th century, that money, specifically the Rockefellers and the like, colonized the whole medical industry, creating hospitals, endowing universities, creating departments, and obviously the healthcare companies, etc. So the reason that that was done is because it's the only way you can actually monetize health and extract the maximum value.
China says the U.S. frequently breaches the World Trade Organization rules and obligations and damages the shared interests of its members. China's Ministry of Commerce made the statements in its first report on U.S. compliance with WTO commitments. The ministry said the U.S. has been pursuing an America First policy for 6 years at the expense of other countries. It cited Washington's abuse of export control and sanctions to hinder other countries' development. The report referred to a vast array of U.S. self-serving actions, such as the blocking of appointments to the WTO appellate body, which led to its paralysis. China also noted that the U.S. is selectively implementing rulings of WTO's dispute settlement body. China's Ministry of Commerce said the report aims to urge the U.S. to shoulder its responsibilities and to safeguard the multilateral trading system. And that does it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament unveiled plans to operate direct flights between Tehran and Hanoi. Speaking at a joint press conference with Chairman of Vietnam's National Assembly, Vung Dinh Hu, held in Tehran recently, Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf said they have held talks on a range of political and economic issues. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Press TV, Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf has hailed the friendly ties between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Vietnam, saying the two countries have agreed to expand their cooperation in various fields. Ghalibaf made the remarks at a joint press conference with Chairman of Vietnam's National Assembly, Vung Dinh Ho, in the capital, Tehran, after the two officials held talks on a range of political and economic issues. He went on to say that during the meeting, the two sides emphasized the need for the establishment of joint committees between Iran and Vietnam to boost cooperation in economic, fishery, health, and medical sectors. Ghalibaf also noted that the two sides have reached agreements on customs and not collecting taxes on imported goods, stressing the need to accelerate their implementation. He further pointed to an agreement on easing the visa regime between the two countries, saying direct flights between Tehran and Hanoi will be launched soon. Elsewhere in his remarks, the Iranian Parliament Speaker described Hugh's trip to Iran as a turning point in the development of ties between the two nations in various economic, cultural, and social fields. He further said a top foreign policy priority of Iran is to pay a special attention to East Asia and expand ties with the countries of that region. Hugh, for his part, appreciated his Iranian counterpart for inviting him to travel to Iran, expressing hope that the trip would help further strengthen the ties between Iran and Vietnam. He also lauded Iran's significant role in West Asia, adding that Hanoi pays attention to the promotion of collaboration between the two countries in various parliamentary, governmental, municipality, and friendship groups. At the end of the press conference, the two top parliamentarians signed a memorandum of understanding on parliamentary cooperation between the two countries. Iran and Vietnam established relations in 1973, and since then, the two countries have increased political and economic cooperation through exchange of visits by senior officials from both sides. Vietnam News also had an eye on this issue, writing, Vietnam and Iran have agreed to further enhance bilateral cooperation in various fields, particularly in trade and investment, to facilitate the entry of each country's key products into the other's market. National Assembly Chairman Vung Dinh Ho held talks with the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf, during his official visit to the Islamic Republic of Iran at the invitation of the Speaker. NA Chairman Hugh expressed his pleasure in visiting Iran, a country with a rich cultural heritage and long history, especially given both nations are celebrating 50 years of diplomatic relations this year. He affirmed that Vietnam highly valued the friendly relationship and multifaceted cooperation with Iran, a crucial partner in the West Asia region. Hugh highlighted the positive developments in the bilateral cooperation between the two countries in recent years, particularly in political, diplomatic, cultural, and people-to-people exchanges. For his part, a Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf, welcomed Hugh's visit, emphasizing that Vietnam is a significant partner for Iran in the Asia-Pacific region. He expressed confidence that the cooperation between Vietnam and Iran, as well as between their parliaments, would witness remarkable growth in the coming period. Vietnam News also added the two leaders exchanged views and reached a consensus on specific measures to enhance bilateral cooperation in the future. These measures included strengthening exchanges at all levels, especially high-level delegations and leadership of economic sectors and localities from both countries, alongside boosting people-to-people exchanges as well as cultural and artistic activities to deepen mutual understanding and enhancing collaboration between committees and bodies of the parliaments, parliamentary friendship groups, women and young parliamentarians groups. They also agreed to ensure effective monitoring and implementation of agreements and commitments between the two nations to enhance mutual support in international forums and prepare for the 10th meeting of the Vietnam-Iran Intergovernmental Committee in Hanoi. Both sides also agreed to intensify meetings and connections between localities and businesses of both nations to explore investment opportunities. NA Chairman Hu suggested that Iran increase imports of Vietnamese agricultural products such as rice, tea, pepper, coffee, and rubber, while expressing Vietnam's readiness to facilitate Iran's exports of fruits, including dried fruits, to Vietnam. Both sides concurred on cooperation in producing products according to halal food standard. According to the outlet, the leaders also agreed to enhance customs cooperation and revive mechanisms of collaboration between the two nations, such as the Joint Working Group on Banking Cooperation and the Vietnam-Iran Trade Task Force, to seek breakthroughs in economic and trade cooperation. The Speaker of the Iranian Parliament noted that Iranian businesses were increasingly interested in the Vietnamese market due to its political stability and favorable investment business environment, aiming to strengthen trade and agricultural cooperation with Vietnam. During the talks, both sides discussed various measures to enhance cooperation in political areas such as science and technology, digital transformation, education and training, as well as promoting and attracting tourism from each country. Hoi took this occasion to invite the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament to visit Vietnam, which he gladly accepted. He also invited the Iranian Parliament to send a delegation to participate in the 9th Global Conference of Young Parliamentarians, scheduled to be held in Hanoi in September. NA Chairman and Speaker of the Iranian Parliament signed a Memorandum of Understanding on cooperation between the two parliaments.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless,
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين زيارة مني ونيابة عن والدي.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves, Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Mohammed Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us. لقد عظم مصابي بك فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثأرك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. بِأَبِي أَنْتَ وَأُمِّي لَقَدْ عَظُمَ مُصَابِي بِكْ May my father and mother be sacrificed for you. Indeed, my affliction due to what happened to you is immense. فَأَسْأَلُ اللَّهَ الَّذِي أَكْرَمَ مَقَامَكْ وَأَكْرَمَنِي بِكْ أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. Therefore, I ask Allah, who venerated your station, who honored me through you, to provide me the succor to avenge for your blood with a supported leader from the family of Muhammad. May Allah pour down His mercy on him and his progeny. Regarding this part, we said that this musab, this affliction must be really felt great. So this is how we can raise this understanding of ours, of this affliction, by reading true and authentic records. And this is when the foundation of our sorrow is true. This is when we can weep for the calamity on the real Hussein, not the Hussein of our fictitious thoughts. Not the Hussein that we have made in our minds. We should try to read authentic records and books and maqtal like those of Luhuf and those maqatil that are, in terms of authenticity and reliability, great. This is when tangible sorrow can be realized. So, in order to realize this sorrow, one has to understand the lifestyle of Imam Hussein, as well as his characteristics and what he reached by being present in the plains of Karbala. Only then it is the time that our weeping for him would be at par with glorification and tasbih. Only then we would pass swiftly in the worship of the Almighty Allah, which is the true meaning of tasbih. That is why tasbih is movement in the path of truth without deviation. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the exemplar of moving in the path of truth without deviation.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates Him, he understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray.
And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Dear listeners, in order to understand the abundant reward for a single tear, let us refer to one narration from Abqariyatul Hisan by Sheikh Ali Akbar Nahawandi. In anticipation of the meeting of the 12th Holy Imam, Sayyid Bahrul Ulum, may Allah's mercy be on him, set out for Samarra. On his way, he was reflecting on the matter of how weeping over Imam Hussein could bring about the forgiveness of sins. That very moment, his attention was driven to an Arab who mounted on a horse and came to him. He greeted him, and the Arab said, "O Sayyid, what are you reflecting and thinking about? If it is a scholarly issue, then tell me. Perhaps I am from those who deserve to know." Sayyid Bahrul Ulum said, "I am wondering how God the Sublime bestows so much reward to the visitors who weep for Hussein alayhi salam. For example, for every step desire takes on the way to visit Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the reward of one Hajj and one Umrah is written. And due to merely one tear, all his minor and major sins are forgiven." The Arab on the horseback said, "Do not be surprised. I will present to you a similitude so that the difficulty is solved." The Arab said, "Once upon a time, a king together with his courtiers went for hunting. And in the hunting ground, he became separated and far behind his courtiers. And he encountered great difficulty therein. He was extremely hungry and thirsty. And he saw a tent from afar in which there was an old woman and her son. They only had one goat from which they would draw milk and manage their lives. The king entered the tent, became their guest, and they served him, and they did so through this very goat that they had. That is, they slaughtered the goat and served him. This is when the time that they did not know this is the king, and they did what they did just in honor of the guest. So they roasted the goat, because they did not have anything else with which to serve this guest. That night the king slept in that very place, and the next day he left, he tried to make up his way, and he found his courtiers. He narrated what transpired to his courtiers, and after narrating the incident, he asked them, "If I would like to reward the old man and her son for their hospitality, what should I do?" One of them said, "You should give them a sheep." Another, who was from among his ministers, said, "Give them 100 goats and 100 coins. Another said, "Give them such and such farm." But the king said, "Whatever I give is less. This is because if I were to give them my kingdom, I would have given them equal to what they have given me. Because that old woman gave me whatever she had. I likewise must give whatever I have so that that would be equal." Thereafter, the Arab on the mount said to Sayyid Bahrul Ulum, "Now Bahrul Ulum, Hazrat Sayyid al-Shuhada gave whatever he had of wealth, of family, of life, of son, of brother, etc. in the way of Allah. So you must not be surprised when God gives all his recompense and reward to the Zaireen and those who weep for Imam Hussein alayhi salam." The Arab, after having had this conversation, vanished from sight. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين
الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. About half of Americans say the best age for a U.S. president is in their 50s. According to a recent Pew Research Center survey, when asked about the ideal age of a president, around half of Americans, 49%, say they prefer someone in their 50s. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to the website of RT, the overwhelming majority of Americans believe that the country should not be run by an elderly president. A poll by the Pew Research Center has revealed only 3% of respondents said they wanted someone in their 70s or older in the Oval Office, according to a study which came out recently. Aged 80, current U.S. President Joe Biden is the oldest ever American leader. His main rival in next year's presidential election is Donald Trump, who turned 77 in June. The authors of the poll noted that they did not specifically mention Biden or Trump when asking people about the ideal age for the head of a state. However, according to the poll, Americans are unlikely to have faith in a young president. The U.S. Constitution dictates that the White House occupants must be at least 35 years of age, and only 3% of those surveyed said they wanted the head of a state to be in their 30s. Almost half of respondents, 49%, believe that the president should be someone in their 50s. Another 24% said they'd like the head of state to be in their 60s, while 17% opted for someone in their 40s, the poll showed. Views about the ideal presidential age were similar among Democrats and Republicans, this study pointed out. The research was carried out on June 5th to 11th among 5,115 adults. All are members of the Pew Research Center's American Trends panel, ATP, and were recruited through random national sampling of residential addresses. A poll last month by CNN SSRS revealed that 36% of Americans are against Biden and Trump running in 2024 election. A race between the two would be something a historic number of Americans don't want, CNN stated. According to WION, U.S. President Joe Biden's approval rating has plummeted to a new low, according to the Elections Analytics website, 538. As per the website, only 39.9% of Americans expressed their approval of the Biden administration, while 54.9% expressed disapproval. Biden's net approval rating has thus fallen minus 15. The latest approval rating of Biden has raised concerns about whether he should lead the Democratic election campaign in 2024 presidential elections and run for a second term. His new approval rating is the lowest since August 9, 2022. On July 18, his approval rating fell to an all-time low to a disheartening 37.4%, although Biden was able to register a slight recovery. According to other websites around the world, President Joe Biden recently experienced a decline in his approval rating, falling below 40% for the first time since August 2022, as indicated by data from Elections Analytics website 538, with only 39.9% of American voters expressing their approval and 54.9% displaying disapproval. Biden's net approval rate plummeted to a concerning minus 15. This development raises questions about Biden's future political endeavors, particularly his intention to seek a second term in 2024. While early polls suggested a strong lead for Biden among other Democratic contenders, there is a possibility of a rematch with former President Donald Trump, who has been gaining momentum and enjoying a significant advantage over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. 538's data highlights a concerning trend for Biden, with his approval rating hitting a new low, the lowest recorded since August 9, 2022. Additionally, he faced the lowest approval rating of his presidency just last month, with a disheartening 37.4% on July 18th. Although there has been a slight recovery since then, with 538 reporting a 40.1% approval rate, the disapproval rate remains significant at 54.5%.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining an interesting question. And that question is, what are the virtues of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam? As you know, or perhaps you might not know, that today, according to a weaker narration, today marks the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Zainul Abidin, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. And because of this, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this very sad and solemn occasion. Many hadiths have been transmitted regarding the virtues of Imam Zainul Abidin, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. In one beautiful hadith, we read the following. Imam Baqir alayhi salam, his son. And, you know, obviously, no person is better equipped to understand the virtues of a person than his family members, and especially one's son, one's immediate family members, like one's son or one's wife, one's father and mother. Imam Baqir alayhi salam says, "Verily, he used to provide for 100 households from among the poor of Medina. He liked for the orphans, the needy, the disabled, the poor and the destitute to be present at his food spread." He liked to invite the poor people, the orphans, the widows, these kind of people. He liked to invite them to his tablecloth. Imam Baqir alayhi salam says he served them with his own hands. And he would, you know, actually he wouldn't ask his servants to give this food to the needy. He would actually give it to them with his own hands. If anyone among them had a family, he used to take the food to their household. Right? Meaning, so if after the meal was done, the imam would actually accompany the person back to his house with the food for them. And he never ate any food, but that he first gave charity from it. These are some of the virtues of the imam. Meaning, these are some of the ways that the imam showed his generosity to people. And a lot of, you know, incidences have been mentioned and have been narrated, which indicate the imam's intense worship of Allah Ta'ala. For example, Muhammad ibn Talha al-Shafi'i has narrated in the book Matalib al-Sa'ul. He says that a fire set ablaze in the house wherein he was in the state of prostration in his prayers. The imam was in a state of sujood or prostrations while he was praying, and a fire occurred in his house. They, meaning the people of the household, cried, "O son of the Prophet, O son of the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, fire, fire." But he did not raise his head from prostration until the fire had been extinguished. After, you know, after everything happened, he was asked, "What is it that diverted your attention away from it, the fire?" And the imam replied, "The fire of the hereafter." The imam was so engrossed and, you know, entranced, if we could use that word, by Allah and his greatness, and he was so afraid of him and the punishment of the akhirat and the hereafter, he was completely oblivious of what was going on around him, and he was unaware that a fire had occurred in his house. This is one of the narrations which indicate the intensity of the imam's preoccupation with the worship of God and his preoccupation with the akhirat and the hereafter. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the virtues of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Again, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this most solemn day. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.